Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Barca for All podcast. Quick note, half of this podcast was already recorded. My laptop shut down. It got the blue screen of death, but then it came back on, so I have to keep using it. But I've decided since then that I will be looking for a new laptop in November because of Black Friday. So that's where I'm at. So what we may be talking about is just like a little rehashed for us. We've already talked about it, so we might not go into depth about certain things. And that can also be a part of my personal how I'm doing / introduction part. So you two, I'll let you have the floor and tell the people how you're doing, even after we've already talked about it 2 days ago.
Personally, I'm very tired and just sad that actually I think that the intro that we made for the episode that is lost, it was pretty funny.
It was a good episode.
Yeah, actually
was about to be a good episode.
We were making fun of Kelsey because she was mispronouncing Catalan names for like Catacoy since forever. So
I've been mispronouncing her name for 4 years, I think.
Yeah, but that's okay. Just sad that people are gonna miss that part. But anyway,
and that may be something that we talk about in the future. We did talk about this again on the last one that didn't save, but I think it'd be a good idea to make an episode where we go over player pronunciations, just to have it out there and so people can know. Maybe a commentator, for example, can read over our, or not read over, can listen and hear the things that we're talking about. And, you know, we'll get into the commentary issue later, but before that, Rajesh, how have you been?
I've been doing good and like looking forward. Next week I'm going to shift to a new place. So yeah, it's going to be a busy time for me for at least the next 10 days. I hope I'll be available for the future episodes because like we are going to have this like time conflicts since I'm from the Indian time. So yeah, I'm doing fine for now.
Yeah, that might be an issue in the future. Who would have thought that being employed and having a job would cause conflict in time? Not me, because I haven't had a full-time job in my life. That's okay. Before we get into the club news, I don't know what I was going to say, actually. Let's just get straight into the club news. I'm a little jumbled today because I'm, again, repeating many things that I've already said. But club news. So since we last recorded the podcast together, just me and Borja on that last one, the club announced that the November Clásico against Real Madrid will be played at the Montjuic, which I believe is the right pronunciation, in the Estadio Lluís Companys.
That's nice. You're doing pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I've been practicing in my head for a good 5 minutes to make sure that was right. So thank you. Which I think is great. More money injected into the women's team is always a good thing. I think it should be a pretty kind of just a default decision from here on out to have the Clásicos played at least in Barcelona's home stadium. I'm not so sure about the Bernabeu, but that's okay. Maybe they'll catch up one day. After that, we want to hit on the injury to Caroline Graham Henson, which is very bad. She should be back. I think we talked about before the Clásico, if I'm not wrong. Do we remember what it was an injury to? Like what part of her body got injured?
Yeah, it was ankle sprain. apparently not very serious because she's called up for the Norwegian national league games. Team. Yep. So if they did it, I hope it's not any kind of reminiscence of the Spanish Federation, and they know that she will be okay by then. I don't know. I haven't checked any kind of Barcelona Feminine stories to check if Caro is within the videos, but that apparently doesn't seem to be very serious.
All right. That's good news, always. And then the next thing is Selma returning from injury, which has also happened, which is always good news. Maybe it could cause a shift in how we see our forward line lineup, especially with False Nine Alexia still being classified as a quote-unquote experiment, even though I don't quite know how much of an experiment it really is. It kind of seems like she's perhaps maybe coming into her main position, who knows? Or maybe not. Maybe we're just sort of void in how many forwards we have in the moment. I mean, I personally don't think that False Nine Alexia will be like a permanent thing, but I also wouldn't be surprised if that were the case.
Yeah, especially because in case we face any kind of team that puts the defensive line really high, in that scenario, I'm not sure Alexia fits that well. Especially if center backs really defend Alexia very tight and doesn't allow her to create superiorities when she comes deeper. So yeah, I pretty much agree. And the thing is, Salma is back and they think of her as a nine as well. They have to invest in Salma as well because she hasn't played at least in Barca as a nine except very specific moments. Like, I don't think it will get to 200 minutes in total. So the thing is, if they believe in that, they should invest as well. And probably we see Alexia coming back more usually to the interior position, as you said, hopefully, or not. I don't know. That's a thing that should happen at any moment.
And speaking of our forward line and, well, sort of, our forward line and what that might be in the next coming months, I wrote down in our podcast script, Frito updates, ? There aren't really many, which is something that we talked about. I just realized that I hadn't really heard much of anything about her condition for quite a while. But yeah, she will probably not be back for another few months, which sucks, but yeah, really sort of bare on the news front, just like injury stuff and the Clásico. But otherwise, we can jump right in into the Real Sociedad match, which happened about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. I'm going to be honest, when we were talking about this, I didn't remember a single thing other than how bad the commentary was on DAZN. And I say that, like, not trying to bring people to harass this individual. I won't even name this individual because that's excessive. And I don't even know if we can blame this person, because I can't imagine that someone, this was a British person, that someone with no knowledge of Spanish name pronunciation like this person had would willingly sign up to do this commentary job. I don't know how that kind of thing works. So just that's the preface. But it was really bad. Like, sort of to the point where it was almost insultingly bad. And really, for the entire first half, it was kind of the only thing that people were talking about. And then at halftime, it cut off, and there was no commentary whatsoever for the entire second half until the very end of the match, where the commentator was like, "And that's all we have for the score." The score, by the way, was 3-0 to Barcelona. Should have led with that, but that's okay. I believe, I don't have it pulled up right now, but I believe it was two Caroline Graham Hansen goals and one Alexia Putellas goal, which it was. Good memory, Kel. So that was really the whole, that was the vibes. I don't think much happened. The commentary was really bad. DAZN quality is just, production quality is not very good. And we won. 3 points. Yay. Borja, what are your thoughts?
Oh, that got me off work.
Sorry.
No worries. yeah, I mean, like, I really look forward to the matches against Real Sociedad because, I mean, I love Natalia Arroyo. Tactically, as a coach and as a journalist, don't get me wrong. But I really look forward to the games against Real Sociedad because she always comes up with something different. It might work or not. Like, we have seen Real Sociedad struggling at times, conceding 9 goals, or other times deserving to win, like last year. We got a goal offside and very late in the match, having really difficulties. But in this case, I think Jona really won the tactical battle because, Jona just made some adjustments on the pressing. Like, it was just Alexia orientating first and all the close options for Real Sociedad in the build-up were covered. So pretty much, Real Sociedad didn't have many chances to get out of the press. And it was until the minute 30, it was all Barcelona, all the way. And yeah, there were some adjustments during the match from Real Sociedad that from time to time they could get out of the press. But in the end, the main difference is the fact that from the last game at the Johannes, it was the fact that the Real Sociedad couldn't get out of the press and the fact that they couldn't press high because they couldn't finish many sequences made that they couldn't press high where Barcelona struggled last year against Real Sociedad. So in the end, I think that moment, that thing of Giraldez really stood out and made the difference. I think there is another thing that was not very much mentioned during the match, and it's the fact that Patri played as a pivot. We all know that Patri's great in distribution. It's perfect pivot because she's the best at every aspect of the game. But having Patri as a defensive midfielder, I think really improves our pressing after we lost the ball. And there were so many turnovers that were produced by Patrice pressing, and that even helped to recover the ball quicker. But yeah, in the end, I think it was the main point where the match is explained. Obviously, Caro scoring 2 goals, one coming from the second post, which is something that is not surprising because she's always been quite successful at that. But so far this season, she's scored those 2 goals in that way. And she has scored 3 goals in total in 300 minutes, I think. So it's 1 goal per 100. So I think if she keeps in this ratio, we'll have a very high goal scoring amount from Caro. But yeah, the rest of the match, I think, is very much on the same line. I don't know about you guys. What do you thought of Alexia as a false nine? Because she played as a false nine in contrast to probably Madrid CFF game.
I kind of feel that was probably our best lineup this season. And it was the best game in terms of movement, dynamism, and chance creation. Like barring the chance conversion actually, and like I could like take my words a little back, like for Alexia playing as a number 9 because she was so instrumental in this game. Like she produced one of her best performances, I could say, and like everyone had that connection inside the pitch, and a lot of that credit has to go to Alexia. Because she was involved in every important play in that game and or an important chance that was created, whether it's with Aitana, Caro, Pina or Mariona, like whoever got the chance to or a chance to shoot at the goal, Alexia was there creating the chance. So I kind of really liked the way the team was set up, and even though like Real Sociedad weren't great that game, like we had a pretty good game. And I would also like to highlight the importance of Mariona in that game, because she played her role to perfection, as Jonah could say, because she didn't try a lot to cut inside, which she used to do. Instead of that, she like kind of stay a little wide from the box and allowed Pinna to cover that position. So Pinna and Alexia could have that 1-2. So yeah, like I kind of felt that it's a pretty good game. And I really want to highlight something about Lucy here, because she wasn't doing any heroics in that game. She was having that nice combination with Caro. Yeah.
Oh. I was expecting that to go in a different direction.
No, but she recently hasn't been that bad, to be honest. Anyway, I was
okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay. We don't have to lie.
Actually, she was bad against Metal CF of... against Atletico,
yes. Yeah, about that.
But against L'Oreal, it was different. They both had a good like combination of chemistry on the right side.
Listen, anyway. No.
We are not going to go podcast free without talking about Lucy Ross.
We never will.
That makes me sad.
Do you want to not talk about how awful she is still anymore?
I mean, I'm joking. I mean, you can talk about her, but probably some people will think that this is kind of a discourse that we have, anti-bronze.
I mean, I'm like open about it.
Oh, yeah, but...
For me, personally.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
it's like a thing. It's okay. But I will say this. I don't think it is right to evaluate players like Lucy Bronze, who the whole narrative around her and her career is that she's world class and that she's been world class for like 5, 6, 7 years now. Why do we evaluate her with the standards of someone who's like 22 and has deer legs and is playing the first game of professional football in their life versus a supposed world-class athlete? That's all I'm saying. It just... Because they're good matches. I agree, they're good matches for her standards, but not for Barcelona standards. So it's like, what's the point in not being honest about it? I'm getting a little saucy. I'm not trying to.
If you don't like what's being said, just change the subject, right? No, but anyway, I don't know. Personally, I try just to judge players regularly. Not unless they are very young or coming out of Barça B or anything kind of that. I just don't look back at them and what they used to or whatever. Even the fact that apparently Lucy Bronze just has one knee fully operative, it doesn't change anything for me. Yeah, but anyway, yes, I just wanted to add something to what we just mentioned about them, Alexia and Mariona and blah, blah, blah. The thing is, I very much agree, but I think that there is still like something that needs to be worked out, because whenever Alexia came deeper, I saw quite a few times the fact that Mariona and Aitana were attacking that space that left Alexia at the same time. And sometimes the occupation of the box was not quite all right. And I think that made Barça create less chances than usually. But yeah, that's a minor thing that I just remember when Reyes was mentioning it, because I think it's important against stronger teams, not just to have a better finishing, but also like when you get on the final third, be more precise on how the players occupy the box whenever Alexia comes deeper, because last season was different. The fact that there was not a false nine as such. So yeah, now we can come back to the Lucy Bronze discourse if you want.
No, please, no. That was like my first, I mean, like, the first time I
was president. We've been, like, good about it, yeah.
No, I would never
We've
do that.
We've been good about it.
I would never do that.
Because at the end of the day, what's the point? She's going to stay here for another year. Like,
why?
Another year. Her contract, I assume, is going to end in 2024, and then she's going to leave.
8 months.
Eight months.
Oh, okay. I was thinking that you thought, like, or that you knew. I thought that you knew for real that she was going to renew, and I was...
You thought I was going to drop insider knowledge on the podcast.
guys, for sure, I know that Kelsey has information, but she doesn't say it here.
I do. So, I do have some. Sometimes people tell me little inklings of things, and I'm like, ooh, thank you. And then we debrief after we're done recording.
If Lucy Burns is renewed, you knew it was said first here. So
we would be the ones to break that story. Not Rich Laverty, not Burhan.
Yeah. Graham Park.
Some other person. Not Mia Erickson. No one. Us.
Maria Ticas.
Maria Ticas. Yeah. Maria Ticas. Not her. It would be us. We are the authority. But I assume she's not going to be renewed, is she? She's not. There's no way. There's no way.
I can say it's a renewal for an year.
Don't say that to me.
I've seen more strange renewals within Barca, and the fact that Lucy Burns gets along very well, very much with other player within the squad makes me...
Borja, stop. When I ask you that question, I'm not trying to have you be honest with me.
Everything will be okay, Kelsey, don't worry.
Okay. Well, not everything was okay, because commentary was terrible, but we don't have to get into that as much as I already did. DAZN get better, that's all I have to say. And Lucy Bronze get better, that's all I have to say. We can move on now to the Atleti match, where I don't think I have anything to say about Lucy Bronze for this match. At least I don't remember anything that was, like, enough for me to tweet about. Usually if something happens that's so stupid or so, like, just not even catastrophically bad, it just makes me question, why would you do that? I would usually tweet about it. Like during the Real Sociedad match, when she, oh my god, the thing that made me so passionate about this match in particular, that she did, she made like a no-look pass to Mappy, and if Jensen hadn't tripped over her own feet running towards that ball, then she would have gotten to it and she would have made a 1v1 versus Muppy. And that, oh my god, I was like, I can't watch this for another couple of minutes. I need to, like, not. And I tweeted about that, I think, in my private circle, but it was something that made me so annoyed that I had to say something. I don't think anything like that happened for the Atleti match. I will be honest about that.
Yes, it happened, so but you don't remember. Bronze.
I do, because it made me, I was like, why would you do that? It's just stupid. That's my biggest complaint, is that so many of her mistakes are just like, why would you do that? What is going through your brain that's like, this is a good idea to make a no-look pass to a center back in my own half? Huh? Anyway. Atletico Madrid. So we won 1-0. It was a classic Barcelona versus Atleti garbage ball match. Very entertaining, though. At least some of it was. We had one goal from Alexia Putellas in the 51st minute. Lovely sort of, not so much a comeback goal, but it was probably, I would say, her first, like, big match goal that she's had since her return from her ACL injury. I can't remember any others in any other, like, big matches, like top 2, top 3 opponent matches.
Actually, that was her first goal against Atletico in a league game, if I'm right.
What?
Yeah. You're right.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, she scored in the Super Cup, I think Champions. That was Kira. So,
she scored from a free kick. Yeah.
Then it was in the Copa del Arena but not in the league, I guess.
I'm That's like a, looking back at all of our former matches that Fogmob will show me.
Yeah, she's cool. That was her first league goal against Atletico.
That's crazy, actually. Alexia's first, what? Because what, isn't Atleti one of her, like, top scored against opponents? Someone did a goal breakdown because of her accomplishment that we'll get to soon.
I think that's Real Madrid.
Oh.
Probably, oops. Like, one of the
Sorry.
Highest. Yeah.
Sorry. Real Madrid. Love that, by the way, that one of her biggest opponents that she scored against is a club who's existed for 4 years. I think that's hilarious. But yeah, she has she scored against Atleti in the 51st minute, and there was quite literally nothing else that happened in terms of goal actions, just that one goal. Yeah, that this was quite the match. So a couple things to touch on. First thing is that it seems pretty solid now that Cata is our regular starter at the goalkeeper position for big matches. We had her starting against Real Sociedad and against Atleti, and we did talk earlier in the season about this exact thing of who would be the main starter, and I think it was the last episode that Borja brought up the fact that Cata, she started the match against, who was it?
Madrid CFF.
Yeah, that one. And she also started against Real Sociedad and now against Atleti. So that seems like the pattern. The more important games that we have, the are the ones that Cata is going to start, and the less important games against weaker opponents are the ones that Paños is going to start. So more likely than not, we are not, again, going to have a Zamora Trophy winner at Barcelona for another season, but that's okay. AMC did not score a hat trick on us like a lot of people were saying she was going to. Which, that whole discourse, I mean, I won't get into it, but it's... I love AMC. I love her. I thought the interview that she gave yesterday with whoever was kind of devastating, I won't lie, where she cried and everything. Where she talked about Barcelona fans. Love AMC. We don't have to lie about how good she's been throughout her career. We don't have to lie about it. We don't have to make up little fantasies and fan fictions about how she's going to score a hat trick against us now that it's like a revenge thing. That's not, it wasn't going to happen. She's never been that guy. And that's okay. And we can be honest about that. So just put that on your brain, internalize it. Love AMC, but let's be honest. Alexia with her goal, I didn't even talk about this, which I probably should have when I was actually talking about her goal. Alexia hit her 181. I think the 181, the last match against Real Sociedad was the one that she drew the record, and 182. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Borja. 182, she has scored that many goals for Barcelona in 11 years? 10 years? She signed with us in 2012, 2013. So, yeah, 11 years. That's a solid, like, 15-ish, 16-ish goals per season, which is sort of wild for a midfielder. I mean, what else is there to say? She's not the GOAT, but she is a legend. She's one of the greatest ever. Definitely the greatest player that this club has ever seen. It's probably hardly ever going to be a debate. And then the other main thing that happened in this match was Aitana. At the end of the match, there was a corner kick for Atleti, if I'm not mistaken, because Lola came up to score a goal. I was like, is it that serious? But Lola came up to try and equalize the match. And it was either Medina or Menayo, but some Atleti player... I'm not even joking. The video is so ridiculous. Like, WWE tackled, duplex, suplex, like, flipped over Aitana, and the ref didn't even catch it because she was staring at Lola. That was so stupid. The video was crazy. If you can find it somewhere, either on like Twitter or YouTube, please watch it. It's so ridiculous. And we can talk about our actual feelings about the match itself, but I also think it might be worth it to have a little discussion of where the league is. Not so much with refereeing, because that discussion is so tired and played out and whatever, but about VAR and when the league might ever expect to see that. But before we talk about that, I'd like to get your guys' thoughts on the match itself.
I think the main factor that explains the game is the fact that we didn't have any kind of pure wingers like Caro or Rolfo, even if she plays as a left back. But in the end, and de facto, the position that she's playing all day is winger, because she plays at the same height as Caro. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is because against a team that defends so tight, so deep, and so in such a compact block, trying to prevent Barcelona game from happening in the middle. Basically, Atleti were inviting us to go outside, and outside we have Mariona, which most of the time drift inside. So in the end, it was Onabadje receiving on the left. I really love Onabadje, but in the end, she's not a pure winger and she's not left-footed, which I think makes a difference in these scenarios, but because being a natural left-footer playing as a left-winger helps you to get outside and having more proper crosses. And on the right, you are missing probably the best winger in the world, the most difference maker in 1v1 situations. And instead of that, you had Esme Brooks, which I really like her, but she's not at that level. And I'm not sure if she has even that ability to have many dribbling and many ability to create chances. In the end, we went to the first half with just 4 dribbling attempts, and 2 of them just successful. And that's very, very low quantity for Barcelona, especially against that kind of block. Because most of the times, the opposition is asking you to do that. And I really think that Barcelona didn't play a bad first half. But yeah, I mean, Atleti were congesting that much the midfield and the center channel, that were inviting us to go outside. And outside, we didn't have the resources to make a difference. So in the end, we really struggled during the whole match to create chances. I think at the end of the match, we just got 1 expected goal, which is very low for Barcelona, even if it's against Atlético de Madrid. But anyway, we got the win and we got the Alexia record goal. And I think that the fact that you are still competitive, I think that it's not that negative. But for sure, we were missing Caro, Rolfo, or even Salman, who got in the second half. But anyway, yeah, hopefully we get Caro back soon.
Do you guys think that we are in need of a striker in the January window, because or even in the summer? Because my thought is Oshawala is healthy, right? Like, she's fully fit to be able to play. And that's like an actual question before I keep talking.
Yeah, I kind of agree with what you are trying to say here, because like Alexia playing as a number 9 or a false 9 didn't work out against Atleti, I would say. Like, maybe I may be wrong, but maybe having a pure 9 who could run behind the defense would have been helpful, because Atleti has had that problem before whenever like Ushuala started the game against Atleti, they suffered against us. So yeah, I kind of like agree or lean more towards having a pure nine in these type of games where they have a compact mid block where we could use the striker to like create something out of nothing.
Right, because Alexia, when she's in this position, I can't tell if it's just because she's still trying to figure out her body and how she moves and how her body works after her ACL tear and after being absent from football for a year, or if she doesn't have the things that are needed to make someone a world-class nine. I think she's a good nine, and I do think that as we've been seeing her matches proceed throughout the season where she plays as a false nine, I think she's been getting better, but I don't know if she could ever reach the level of being a consistently reliable nine that can score like 25, 30 plus goals per season like she could when she was playing at center mid. And honestly, I feel like having a nine like that is so overdue for Barcelona. I mean, I can't even think of the last time we had a pure nine since, like, quite literally Olga Garcia. Because we had Tony Duggan, we had Jenny, we had Oshuala. I mean, world-class pure nine. We had Jason, then JC left after a year, and we still have Oshuala, and now we're trying to use Alexia. At what point do we say, okay, we need to invest in someone like a Katoto, like a Choinga, like a... God, even a Hegerberg, you know, like, who... When do we stop playing around with it? It's the same situation as what I feel like we've been doing for so many years with our fullback positions, of either, like, taking players to play in this position when it's not their natural position, or getting second-best players when we could be getting world-class players. I mean, we're Barcelona. We have the pull for it. I just don't get... You know, if we have a nine like Oshuala, why did we keep her if we're not going to rely on her? If she's someone that could be starting in probably any other team in the world, in Europe. It's like, you know, especially when she has a track record of doing well against Atletico Madrid. I just feel like she should have had more of a role in this match and perhaps some other matches that we've played this season, and I'm like not quite understanding why she hasn't. If you guys have any thoughts on anything I've just said. It's kind of a tired discussion because we've had it many times before, but still.
No, I think the fact that Oshuala is not starting is just that Giraldez is giving more importance to investing in Alexia as a false nine and getting the fundamentals of that position rather than anything about Oshuala. Because actually, Jonah has trusted a lot Oshuala and has invested a lot in her, right? Like the first season of
Jonah
in the past, yeah.
No, but in the past, but the fact, well, sorry, go on.
Yeah, I think he was instrumental in renewing her contract for 2 years, if I'm right. Like she renewed in 2022, right? For two years or 3 years?
Yeah.
I think so. I think that's right.
Yeah. So yeah, he like I think Jonah wanted her to renew. So I don't think like there's something between them. So it's most probably like Boha said that they want to invest more in Alexia as a number nine. But the thing is, like everyone knows that Alexia is one of the best when she arrives in the box late. Like there are certain qualities that we could expect only from a pure nine. That, like, I'm not saying that Alexia is bad at it, but there are certain deficiencies like when she's playing as a number nine. Running behind the defense, or certain characteristics that a pure nine has. So, like, I don't quite understand, like, why we weren't looking for a number nine the last season. I mean, the transfer window. And I think even Tikas stated that we could be missing a number nine.
The thing is, in the transfer window of the winter, what can you get as a nine? Because, and actually,
and that's
the worst thing,
because I don't know.
For free, I guess someone from the US or from any Scandinavian league or even Chinese, maybe Barbara Branda, is about to end her contract. But anyway, do we have fair play space to get any striker?
I mean, I don't want us to be like Arsenal, because they do these winter signings because they haven't properly planned their squad at the start of the season. So I don't think that could work. So bringing in someone in the winter transfer window and try to like integrate them into the team, I would instead wait till the summer to get a better striker. I think Ada's contract is going to end by next season. So we could actually like wait for the season to end and try to focus on the season and get something out of it.
Even probably in the summer we won't be able neither, because we don't know what the scenario will look like in terms of fair play. And actually, one of the reasons why Markel left was that he expected that to be worse. So we don't know. If we get rid of any kind of big player, like probably Kira Walsh or anything, maybe we have that space. But it's a very tough decision. In the end, for me, we are not scoring that many goals because Alexis playing as a false nine and not as a midfielder, which probably helps to create more chances. It's because how Liga F teams are defending us so far in these four matches. It's because we miss Rolf Fancaro to create more chances. I think it's kind of a mixture, and I'm happy with how it looks for us, the striker position, for the rest of the season, because in the end we have more complete profiles than last year. Last year we just had Geisa and Oshuala, both very offensive, very vertical, very going to space, but not providing enough in coming deeper and associating with the rest of her teammates. And now we have Oshuala, which has proved herself as a very high goal scoring, probably not against top teams in Europe, but anyway. And you have the kind of profile of Alexis, a false nine, that probably is something that he's missing since Jenny left. And then you probably have Bruna, which is kind of similar to Alexia. And you have also, and I think it's Salma, potentially being played as a nine, which is probably the most complete striker that we will have. I think it's very early in the season. Let's see if Jonah is going to invest as well in Salma as a nine. And probably this won't be a discussion. In my view, I think that...
I don't think it will either. Because, I mean, that probably is the most likely course of action, is that Salma will end up playing as the nine. At least I think so.
I don't know. I think for Liga F games, probably will very soon see Alexa coming back to playing as a midfielder once Jonah thinks that she's fully adapted. And then we will see depending on the rival and the context that we are going to face. But to be honest, I think that the thing that could prevent us from winning a big match is the fact that Caro or Rolfo get injured and we are going to miss a lot kind of chance creations from the wing. That's because... let's see the development of Esme, but so far she doesn't seem to be that striker that is very successful in dribblings and actually tries it. To be honest, if I could get any sign in this transfer window in the winter market or even in the summer, it would be a pure winger, because I think that's the risk. Actually, is not if Alexia plays as a nine or as a midfielder, because the chance creations will be there. And the attacking the box from Alexia, I think is pretty good. I think that the risk that we are taking is the fact that if any winger gets really injured, like as I said, Rufo or Caro, and that prevent us to create many chances because the opposition team's defense, like Aleti did last Sunday.
Do you see Onabache going back to the right back position once Rolfo gets back?
Hopefully, right? I mean, we'll agree on that, right?
Yeah, because like that could give a lot of us on the right side as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that would be a very compliment for Salma whenever she plays as a right winger, because she tends to drive inside because she's left footed. And the fact that she has a right back that has that stamina, that ability to go high very quickly and cover the full blank, I think that will be a very, very compliment for her. But yeah, we'll see. I think once Rolfo comes back, I think we all know that Ona will be played as a right back, right? There is also one thing that I was thinking as well. If for any reasons we are going to miss Caro for injury, because so far since she's been in Barcelona, she's at times a struggle with that. I was thinking the fact that Ona probably could play as a right winger, because
yeah,
I think after Caro is the one that could replicate that role. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with you on that. Okay. Like I was asking about this fair play. So the club mentioned that they are expecting a revenue of 17 to 18 million at the end of the season. So do you think that would actually help out so that we could sign someone?
I don't know. I'm still confused on why the men's team's finances are disrupting our signing issues. I fundamentally do not understand why that's happening.
Okay. The thing is that basically that every professional Barcelona section, it's Barcelona Femini, basketball, handball, and hockey patines. I don't remember the other one.
Roller, but basically, hockey, I think is what we call it.
Yeah, but I don't know which other is the football indoor section.
Oh,
anyway,
football, yeah.
All those finances of those teams influence Barcelona fair play as a whole. The thing is La Liga. How they created the fair play rules. Any expenditure in terms of salaries from any other part of the club affects to the men's football section. So in the end, the thing that we have a revenue of 2 million euros in the women's football section doesn't matter because it doesn't make any difference. For sure it helps, but it's very, very far from helping because it should be like a very higher quantity. The thing is, you are assigned a quantity that you can get as a wage for all sections, and you cannot surpass that. And in the end, it doesn't look that is gonna get better because, for instance, in the men's, in the football's men's section, they are still trying to find ways in order to sign and register Victor Roque. So if we are gonna sign a very, very, very good striker, that would mean, I don't know, half a million of a salary, and if they are struggling to register a striker that is gonna is not going to earn that much in the first men's team, I'm not sure where it leaves us. So I'm not very optimistic. And the fact that the 2 million, it doesn't matter really, because we could get 10 million of surplus and we will still be in the same position because it's affected by other things. It's basically by ordinary incomes from the men's team and the expenditure. So it won't make a difference, unfortunately.
So AMC and Nudia leaving, since each section has their own, you know, like wage limit on how much they can give to their entire squad. Does that mean that a signing, I assume the Onabate signing, made it so that the wage allocation that we had, we went over that, you know, we had too high of wages and we had to make cuts? And those cuts were Nudia and AMC? Is that how that works?
I think that the fact is that this season we could assign a lower ceiling.
Oh.
And for sure, I think the signings of Esme and Ona.
I did forget.
Probably affected, but in the end, if Nuria and Amari remain within Barcelona, we will still have a 24 number squad, the same as last year. So my view, probably Ona is earning more money than Nuria or AMC, but from what I know and from what I can guess is that the fact that we got this year a lower ceiling. So we have to make numbers if we wanted to. We have to make that decision, even if, yeah, I mean, the Nuria was basically a fair play decision. So yeah.
So then, Rajesh, I suppose the answer to your question would be no.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think
I would like everyone to like understand a little bit about this because they're getting into the false hope. I could see in the Twitter, they're getting into the false hope of us signing a better player since we got this much of revenue. But no, we are not going to, because that's not where the money will be going to. There's a limit for the women's team, and you should be having your expenditure within that limit.
Yeah, which, probably the thing is.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No, the thing is probably that we could get some space on the fair play if Barcelona gets any kind of big sponsor or any kind of big income that helps to alleviate the fair play situations of many of the rest of the teams. But the thing is, by itself, Barcelona Femini having a surplus of 2 or 10 million wouldn't make much of a difference. So in the end, we just need to help to Barcelona to have a better, I don't know, any kind of income that we are not expecting by today. But we will see.
And actually, we got a new sponsor, right? Like last week or even before that, they announced something like that.
Yeah, but that doesn't seem to be for the women's teams of basketball and football, right?
Yeah.
You meant that. But yeah, but it's not a big sponsor. Probably should be like, I don't know, any kind of a strategic global partner rather than just one for the women's team, because to be honest, that quantity shouldn't be high enough. So yeah, I think it's just...
Like Liga FA, they also got a couple of sponsors.
Yeah, but I think it's kind of the same, and that wouldn't influence much of how teams will get income. We'll probably, rather than all of these reasons that we made, probably we will be more, if there is any kind of big transfer from the men's team, probably that would make a difference, but still, I don't think that's very likely. So I would tell people just to remain not very optimistic in this scenario. But anyway, we'll see by next year. Football, everything in football happens very quickly, so you can predict.
Whenever I bring up transfers, I always forget that we have financial fair play regulations to uphold to. So everything that I mentioned about getting a striker, probably ignore that because I'm a little forgetful sometimes. Realistically, you're right. It probably won't happen, which sucks because I feel like this team, Barcelona is obviously a really appealing team to play for. You know, it's a really nice city. It's a really nice place to live. We play good football, we win a lot of trophies, blah, 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 blah. It's not cold. Like, I swear the main complaint that every footballer has about Germany or France or whatever is that it's too cold. You know, it's not really an issue in Barcelona. And I would know because I went there in the summer and it was 97 degree heat, which is, for me, well, 97, whatever 97 is from Fahrenheit to Celsius, 97 F to C, thank you, Google, 36 degrees Celsius. It was nasty. But people in Europe, they love that. So, you know.
We love that too. Here in India, we do have a similar, like, kind of climate or temperature. Anything between, like, 35 to 40.
Oh, that's nasty.
Yeah, that's in summer. That's in the summer.
Oh, my God. Here in the summer, it's probably, like, maybe 34 to 32, 31 average, which I can deal with, but summer in Barcelona is brutal. I was struggling because I'm used to AC. I'm an American. That's what we do.
It's close to the sea.
And it's close to the sea. There's a beach.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it was beautiful. It was great. So
why didn't you mention food? Like, I think it's probably the biggest one.
Can I tell you?
No way, you didn't like food.
I thought it was awful.
I'm officially announcing that I'm leaving this podcast from now on. You won't listen to me.
I'm so sorry. Okay, look, I'm so sorry to drop this bomb on you right now.
The thing is, where did you go? Because
I didn't go to a tourist area. No? I went to a Michelin star restaurant in Alicante.
And that's even worse. I mean, I can tolerate that you like Catalonian food, but not liking Valencian food, my food, that's absolutely disgusting.
I mean, I had been avoiding, because it was like, I had talked to Borja so much about being in Spain. I had been avoiding the fact that I didn't, because I hadn't talked about food. I've been avoiding this for so long, and I can't believe it just came out. I'm sorry. It was mid, okay?
I can't believe it. But
what
in particular you didn't like it? Like, it was very oily. People will like it, actually. I mean, like, probably it's not the best promotion for Spanish tourism, but
I could talk about this for so long. It was flavorless. That was my biggest gripe. I'm sorry. What do you want me to say? I didn't like tapas. Well, some of them are okay. And I like seafood. I had so much seafood. Not so much, but like I had a good amount of seafood for what I usually eat in my day-to-day diet. Mm-hmm. And it was okay. I've had better. Pretty much everything I had, I've had better. In the United States.
I'm actually speechless because I don't know how to react, to be honest. That's shocking to me. I used to have a flatmate when I used to live abroad. I used to have a flatmate from Chicago. Probably Chicago is the best place in the US from now on for me. And actually, I cook Spanish food for him, and actually, he loved it. I mean, and
What did you cook him?
Spanish omelette, huevos rotos. I don't know how to say broken egg seems like a very bad word to say in English.
Broken egg.
Yeah, actually, because actually I'm from Valencia and I don't know. I mean,
I've never heard you talk this fast in your life.
because my heartbeat is 180. I don't know.
You just triggered him.
Yeah, absolutely. You're triggering me more than Lucy Bronze does it to you. And that's very bad.
Oh my god. Yeah, I had paella from a Michelin star restaurant in Alicante, and it was good, but it wasn't like what I would expect Michelin star quality to be. It was good. I liked the type of rice. I liked the meat that they used. I like the seasonings, the flavor. It was just a tad bit bitter, but it was like good. Okay. But I was expecting like mind blowing, and I guess maybe my expectations were too high.
Yeah, probably. But one question: usually, I mean, when you live in the US or when you travel abroad, not just to Spain specifically, what kind of food do you love? What are you looking for when you go to a restaurant?
Oh, I'm looking for like whatever the locals eat. I'm not trying to do that American shit where it's like I want chicken tendos and burgers. You know, I'm not that kind of person.
Oh, so in the end, listen, guys. The last day that she was in Madrid.
No. I was in Madrid for one.
You went into a fucking McDonald's. I mean, like.
No, it was a Burger King. I went and I did that. Listen to me. I did that because my dad wanted to know if it was the same, and it does taste the same as it does in America. Same with the McDonald's. Okay, I was alone. I didn't want to sit somewhere alone in a restaurant until late at night because you guys eat at like 10 p.m.
That's true.
11 p.m.
Actually, now it's 11:15 p.m. in Spain, and I haven't had dinner yet.
Well, that's just you.
Yeah, but the thing is, you're the first foreigner that I know that wasn't happy with the Spanish food.
Oh God!
And the fact that it was Kelsey, it makes me extremely sad.
I went to a tapas place. There was like a texture of a cheese, like a fried cheese. Okay, listen, I didn't even order. My Spanish friends ordered for me. Okay, don't judge what I ate there. There was like a fried cheese thing, and the texture of the cheese. Me and my girlfriend, we both tried it at the same time, and the Spanish person who was with us, and the texture of the cheese was it literally makes the hair stand up on my arms. The texture of the cheese was so bad that I had to like chug the last of the water that I had and try not to gag and cry. It was so bad. But that was just one thing. Like, they had what else did they get? They had some little sardines. Those were cute and fun. I liked those. I'm like completely blanking. There was a lot of cheese, and just in general, I'm not big on cheese. I'm not big on eggs. So I didn't like either of those things.
I don't know. I think that I fail as a Spanish giving recommendations to a foreigner. Anyway, I will try my best next time, but I don't know.
But the fruit there, I will say the fruit there was incredible. It's the best fruit I've ever had in my life. And I've been to like coastal farms in California where it's in season in the summer. It's better than that. Best oranges I've ever had in my life. I will give Spain that much.
But you were out of season to eat oranges. That doesn't make any sense.
It was still the best oranges I've ever had in my life. They were that good.
Okay.
They were so good. Like, you don't know. I'm sure you know. But like, you don't know. They were so
No, actually,
good.
My grandfather has like quite a few plantations of oranges. But yeah. Anyway, I don't know.
Later. I'm sorry.
Yeah, for sure. We are going to talk about that because I don't want to disturb the rest of the audience, but
my God.
For sure. Good damn.
The best food that I had there was Moroccan food.
Yeah, Moroccan food is good. Not going to lie, but
I thought you were going to yell at me for that. It was incredible. I loved it. Sorry. Sorry about him. Sorry. I'm sorry. Sorry, audience, for...
You're lucky that we don't have a Spanish audience, because probably Spanish audience won't listen to Spanish, to a podcast in English, but...
Lo siento a nuestro...
No, they are going to listen to this episode.
En español. Lo siento mucho.
Like, maybe we should particularly mention that Kelsey did something in this episode, so please listen to this.
I didn't do a single thing. I gave an opinion. Lock me up! I didn't know that was illegal. The woke mob is coming after me. The Spanish woke mob. Shit. Anyway, do you think there should be VAR in Liga FA?
We're gonna keep talking like nothing happened here.
What? I mean, how do you want to transition away from that?
No, that's okay. Okay, we're getting serious. I didn't understand what Mappy did. I mean, wait, what the fuck do you tweet that?
I mean, oh my god. Okay, so I'm sure everyone saw this already, but Mappy, she got decked in the face. She had so much blood coming down on her like eyebrow. I don't know if it should have been a foul. I like didn't watch that closely. I'm sure it was. I don't know if it or I, what was it? Was it something that was like they both butted heads at the same time, or was it more of like?
I think it was the elbow of Merel Van Dongen, and then she also saw a clip of having a kind of the same situation with Anna Mari. Yeah, but the VAR climb was with the thing with Merel Van Dongen.
Really? I thought it was more about what Medina did to Aitana.
No. The Medina was just Aitana tweeting like, oh, this is WWE or Liga F. No, the thing with VAR was the thing with Mappy and Merel. Which is kind of strange because, I mean, like, I guess that Mappy knows the situation within the Liga F. We don't have, I mean, like, even if tomorrow the Liga F suddenly finds 50 million euros behind the bet, they wouldn't be able to get VAR because the stadiums where most of the games are played are not eligible to have VAR. For instance, take Levante Las Planas pitch. What the heck do you plan a VAR?
Most of them are training pitches. I mean, if we're being honest.
Actually, you are getting in most of the games completely shitty angle cameras because they don't have no room to be placed properly, and you hope to get 9 more cameras in order to get VAR. It makes no sense, and actually, it's a lot of money, and many clubs can get the minimum wage to be 500 euros higher. What do you expect with VAR? I don't know. It's very, very, very odd from Mappy, actually.
I would say that's the biggest issue. I mean, because it's one thing that, you know, stadiums can't really accommodate it, and certain clubs can't find stadiums to play in that would be big enough or already have the facilities to do VAR, but the clubs themselves just literally don't have the resources for it. And I wouldn't be surprised if once, you know, women's football continues to grow and, you know, I assume the WSL will be the leader for it, and then maybe the Bundesliga, and then the D1. I feel like we as in the Spanish league would probably be the last to implement it, if we're being quite honest, just because I feel like the complete lack of resources and just lack of investment and care in general from a lot of clubs, especially the ones that are, you know, middle to bottom of the table, it just doesn't seem realistic anytime soon in the future, because implementing VAR, it has to be a league-wide decision, right? Like, some clubs can't just, like, some have it and some don't. It has to be every single one.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, in the WSL, the English League, actually, they kind of came up with a light version of VAR, and they were actually going to test it with less cameras and not that complete, mostly for offside, some very, very clear situations. And apparently it could be a thing in the, I can't recall, it was in the 25-26 season, but it's still far away. I don't know. In the Spanish context, I see it very, very far from happening, because actually, if you can spend actually 20 million euros on VAR, it makes more sense to invest that money in infrastructures and the teams to get better staff and be more professional. I can understand that Mappy could say this for other competitions. For instance, Copa de la Reina and Supercopa, that are both organized by the RIFF, that they have the resources and they could place the games in stadiums with VAR already installed. That could be a, that's a very, very, very easy to complete. Very easy to complete. And that would make more sense, because actually, if you lose a league game, doesn't, it's not such a drama. But if you lose a Copa de la Reina because the you've been called out an offside that, that wasn't, that's a very difficult, different thing. So in the end, to be honest, if we're gonna, if you want to get VAR within Spanish football, it makes sense. It makes more sense to do it in Copa de la Reina final or Supercopa, because you already have stadiums ready to play there and already have VAR. And actually, there is another thing. If referees are so bad, if you give them VAR, we will get adding time of 15 minutes because they will be checking all the day. So actually, even I would say just invest that money to train better to the referees.
And actually, giving VAFA referees VAR would be like giving a chicken a gun.
Yeah, probably.
Like, what are they going to do with it? Or maybe even a monkey a gun, which they have thumbs, so they could do something with it, and it wouldn't be pretty. It's a terrible analogy. It just popped up in my brain, and I felt like I needed to say it.
In the end, if you want to get better referees, just get rid of, in Spanish we call it cuota, which is basically that only women can referee in women's football in the highest categories, and probably you should get rid of that. And the fact that also ban, if you don't want to do so, ban women referees from going to the men's football, because in the end, Marta Huerta de Aza, which is probably the, I don't think she's the best, but she's quoted as the best female referee. She doesn't referee any women's Liga F game. She's refereeing on men's first division, second division, or Primera Ref. So in the end, is you just get women to referee in the Liga F, and the best ones get out of it, and actually you get the worst ones. So I don't know. I mean, like, seems very, very odd to me. And if you want to get better refereeing, you should start from there and just have better referees.
I mean, because my whole thought with the referee strike that happened a couple, like, last year, is that usually when you pay people more, it's more of an incentive than anything else to do better at their job. But I'm not sure that that was the case with the referees this past season and continuing. Because it's still, like, bad. But it's also, like, I don't know. They only have two eyes. So to an extent, it's like, I understand why the referee was mostly focusing on Lola when Aitana was suplexed into the ground. But it's also like, this happening is such, it's so silly and so unnecessary, and I know I couldn't do it, but it's like, it has to get better at some point, because it comes to a point where it's diminishing the quality of the product itself. And that is not what Spanish football needs right now. After an entire summer of controversy, after, you know, having so much terrible things happen with women's football in general in Spanish football, the last thing it needs is, like, someone actually does tune into it and sees this, quite frankly, garbage refereeing and is like, oh, this is how this league is. This is how this country's women's football program is. It's just so below par for what it needs to be. And it's like, you know, at what point does it get better? At what point does the bar start being raised? I don't know. But I think that might be the end of our discussion on VAR. Because I don't really, because at some point, it's like, what really, what more can you say if they just won't put in the time, won't put in the investment? It really does seem like it will end up being a waiting game, which is what it tends to be in Spanish women's football, but I digress. So that's mostly what has all transpired in the past couple of weeks. Next up, we have the Champions League draw coming, and that will be happening tomorrow. We are currently recording this on Thursday. The most difficult group we could have, I think, is Barcelona, PSG, Roma, and Frankfurt, which would be my own personal nightmare. And then the easiest would be Barcelona, Slavia, Prague, SK, St. Poulton, and Braun. Not sure if I pronounced those non-top five teams' names right, but we shall see. I want us to play Paris FC. I want to see what they're about, because they are a very good counter-attacking team, which I think has a tendency to be one of our biggest weaknesses. And I also think that they're just like a fun team. I would like to see, because obviously, you know, they beat Arsenal and Wolfsburg, which is a pretty huge thing to do in qualifying, no less. I think it would be really interesting to play them and see, you know, what we truly be up against. And then, of course, there is the topic that we can touch on briefly of a certain coach of a certain Manchester United section saying interesting things about his side. Although he's not saying those things in good faith about Champions League qualification, I do think that he unfortunately raises a point. There is, at least for me, I think there's some problems with Champions League qualification, and having teams like that go out earlier probably, although I do think it's fun that like big teams like Arsenal and Wolfsburg and United are going out in the qualification process, it probably kind of does take away from the product as a whole if you're a neutral wanting to watch this. I mean, Wolfsburg was a finalist and Arsenal was a semi-finalist, and Manchester United is one of the biggest teams in the world, so it's like, I do see that he raises a point, but it's also, the reality of it is that we don't have a Europa League, and we don't have a separate competition that women can play in, where the smaller teams can have a chance to make a big thing. So until we have that, I honestly do feel like the conversation is sort of pointless, because, I mean, the smaller teams, if you're talking about the best team in, I don't know, Andorra, in Montenegro, in Estonia, you know, we're not going to be talking about the best teams in Europe. But they still, if you're talking about the UEFA Women's Champions League, the European tournament, it needs to include every single one of these teams. And maybe there should be more pre-qualification processes, but I think as it stands now, that's not possible. I don't think those countries have the resources to be able to do all that traveling and fit that in their calendar and do this and do that. It just doesn't seem like a viable option for the Champions League right now. And I guess my whole philosophy on it, it's easy for me to say this as a Barcelona fan, but if you want to be in the competition, just win. I don't know. It's pretty easy for us, but...
But you could have a bad day.
Yeah, I mean, and that is true.
Especially at the beginning of the season, where probably most of the players are not adopted. So I kind of get the frustration from Mark Skinner or other coaches that have being very vocal in the same way. And actually, I agree on some points, but at the same time, the timing, what they say, it makes you look more salty than wise or fair when you say.
And that's exactly Skinner's problem, is that he's only he only wants to talk about things like this when he is on the losing side. And even before this matchup, he was already talking about, like, this is unfair. You might as well just be admitting that your team is going to lose then. Like, that's a terrible mentality to bring that into.
I mean, Manchester City lost twice to Real Madrid in the qualifying round, and I don't think they have campaigned something like this.
No.
Like, it's just the 16 teams, so I don't think, like, they could change anything. Like, if they could expand it to, like, 24 teams, maybe there's a chance that they could change the structure of qualifying. Otherwise, like, I don't see anything could be made to make like the teams with higher coefficient qualifying without even winning the game. I don't think so, because if they are doing that, then they are not going to give a chance for the teams that are coming from the lower ranked association. So
And especially, like, these qualifiers have shown us that, like, a team that is objectively good based on a number, you know, based on, like, UEFA coefficient, club coefficient specifically, not necessarily the country one, them having a higher number doesn't mean that they're going to be better. Because, I mean, there is obviously nuance to this conversation, like Borja, like you said, like, you know, you can have a bad day, you can have this, that, or the other thing happen to you, and, you know, it's not representative of the quality of your team as a whole. But it's also, with that, it's also true that, you know, why are Arsenal why are Arsenal and Wolfsburg going out in qualification to a team that hasn't appeared in the Champions League since they were known as Juvisy? You know what I mean? Like, Paris FC is not some football heritage team. It's Paris FC. No disrespect to them, but they are newcomers here. Like, they should have been beaten by Arsenal, and they should have been beaten by Wolfsburg.
I mean, they had two legs. To qualify against them. Even if you're going... even if you're having a bad day in one of the legs, you could still come up in the second leg and, like, you could qualify. But that doesn't happen. That speaks about the quality of the other team. So I think Paris FC deserved it. And PSG, yeah, we know they are the front runners every year. So, like, I don't understand why this becomes a discussion when we talk about the qualification, because this has been before the last 2 years, and there hasn't been any complaints when couple of bigger teams.
United haven't been there.
Yeah. Since United are here, like, then they should say something about it. No. Like, the important thing they have won is the championship. They didn't even win any cup.
Exactly. Gareth Bale complained in the past, and probably mostly due to the dates of the... Because actually, I can remember the first time they got eliminated by Real Madrid. It was just a few days after coming back from the Olympics, most of their players from the GP team. And actually, I think that's a topic as well. This is a no, because it's been later in the season. But I don't know. And yet, I think that most of these discussions are just, it leads to nowhere, because we are going to get a format change very near in the future. Because
are we really?
Yeah, when Mark Skinner is saying this, when Gareth Taylor said that, when Jonas Idiwol said blah, 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 they are just putting pressure on UEFA. It will happen, because it already happened in the past. I mean, the Champions League hasn't been this way. And actually, the men's Champions League is going to change as well in order to favor bigger teams in Europe from the top five leagues. And
I mean,
in the women's Champions League, because it will be also that DAZN who will push, because if Arsenal gets out, it's less subscriptions to DAZN, because most of Arsenal's fans probably are not followers as well of women's football. And the same goes with Manchester United, who has as well a very high, a very big audience, a very high fan base. So it's going to change in the end because every part of this has an incentive to do it. I don't know how soon we will see it, but I think it's very, very likely to happen.
Yeah, I kind of like, they're going to bring a lot of revenue or like visibility. They're going to play in the bigger stadiums, like which is not going to happen this season. So yeah, that brings a like lot of things into debate when they are looking to change it. But I think maybe in a season or two, they may change it, but not right now.
No, because it has to be on the cycle ends on 2025, right?
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
we could see any kind of change. Anyway, money will speak, and I think it will be the biggest incentive. I think there is some reason that people is giving in order not to change it is the fact that, oh, teams from smaller leagues won't get money. This is a way they could get money, and I can buy it. But if we want to redistribute money within European leagues in order to grow women's football in minor leagues, probably this is not the best way either, because you depend on getting qualified. Maybe we could just, if we get higher TV revenues, part of that distribute it more equally within leagues and give it probably more to weaker leagues. I don't know, that's a reason, because in the end, okay, you get 400k from qualifying to the final to the group phase, and you do it because you go from a easier route, because you go through the champions path and not from the other one, which is more difficult, because you can come across Arsenal, Wolfsburg, blah blah blah. But the thing is, you only get that money in a very specific case if you actually win it, but it's not something which you will get and your league will get every year. And I don't think it's the best way in order to improve weaker leagues. And actually, if you get qualified to the face group, what's the point? You earn money, you earn 400k, but you then go to, I don't know, against PSG and you lose 5-0 to 5, you go then to Barcelona and you lose 5-7. That does it help in order to improve your level as a football team? I'm not sure about that neither. And it doesn't help the Women's Champions League, because it's much less attractive. Actually, for me, I watch every Barcelona game, but for other teams, I just don't watch a Wolfsburg, St. Pauli, for instance. I don't know.
Maybe they could expand it to 24 teams.
Yeah, it could maybe be a solution, but in the end, but probably that won't be a solution, because the bigger teams will complain because they will get less money, because you will have to distribute the TV rights within more teams, maybe, and more expenditure from UEFA in order to organize, to pay traveling and so on. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know.
I do think an expansion would probably be the best course of action, you know, when that 2025 cycle starts. Because a complete restructuring where, you know, teams in Europe are inherently favored over the smaller teams in smaller countries, you know, that's just like fundamentally not fair. Because the main thing that I'm hearing is like, all these big managers, sort of like Emma Hayes in 2022, when, you know, Chelsea were knocked out of the group stages, and Skinner now, it's like, you just want the quote-unquote big teams to get a free pass into the tournament. And that's like, I personally like how equitable it is right now, or at least how equitable it feels. I mean, the randomization of the draw makes it so that one of the biggest teams in Germany and one of the biggest teams in Europe can be dominated by, they're not necessarily an up-and-coming team in France, but given the era that they're in, they're up-and-coming for like the 2020s. I like that. I think it's good to have that competition, even if it means that the legacy teams aren't included. So me, as like a women's football fan, as a neutral, I enjoy it. But I understand why, you know, obviously an Arsenal fan or a United fan who have much bigger fan bases and are watching the game for this one team and one team only, why they would have a lot more gripes in it than someone who's just wanting to follow the game for the game because they enjoy it. So we didn't solve the problem today, guys, but maybe we can on the next one. Maybe some other day. But I think that's pretty much all. We had a long episode, and a good amount of it was Borja yelling at me because I didn't like his country food. So maybe we'll have an equally as an entertaining one for you next time. But until then, we will see you later in the next episode. Bye!